here at the wonderful press center.
Beautiful,
it's like it's like an amphitheater-styled media room, and we watch it. Actually, we watch it on TV, and we have the leaderboard, and you can't really cover a golf event by just following one group, obviously. So this is watching it on TV is the best way to cover it, even though I'm on the grounds of the golf course.
Well, I covered, because I worked for the St. Paul Pioneer Press at the time, and I covered the very first year that the new press center opened. I was never in the tent, and a lot of people talked about, you know, having been in the tent and how that was, and I was there for more than 15 Masters in a row, and then as you may have heard with newspapers, economy hit them, so we stopped covering them. But it was I loved going to Augusta, because every time I pulled into that, you know, the press parking lot, and walked into that press room, it's like I'd been there a few weeks earlier. The time gets condensed when you walk back there, because there's some changes on the course, but it essentially doesn't change.
And that's what's such a beautiful part of being here every year, that they try to maintain so many traditions here and at the same time keep up with, you know, all the new technology and you know, social media and more media outlets. More and more people are learning about the Masters and about this gorgeous course. There's so many different ways to read about it and to view it. So they're trying to keep up with the times, but yet trying to keep it like it was yesterday, and that's a hard thing to do.
Yeah, it is. Now, is there a time? Now, I don't know. What, did you get in Monday or Tuesday or yesterday?
Well, I got in Sunday.
Oh, you did.
And I
okay.
wanted to be here for the junior competition, but you know, it was Easter Sunday, so I got in a little later on Sunday than I had hoped. But you know, it's almost like if you don't come in early, you know, when I get here, I hit the ground running, and it's just a whirlwind. So the earlier I can get in, the better, and you know, the more time I can spend on this golf course, the better, because it's like heaven on earth as far as I'm concerned. So, and I have, you know, I've had the opportunity to play this golf course twice. I don't know if we talked about.
Oh,
that.
Wow, no, we haven't.
The Monday after the Masters, if you're an accredited media person, you can put your name in a lottery. And if you get picked, they pick about 40 or 50 to play the course. And, you know, the Monday after, the pins are in the same location on the green. And, you know, it's in the same condition. You know, it's as tough as ever. And I got chosen to play in 99. And then you have to wait 7 years before you put your name back in the lottery.
Yeah, there's a waiting period.
Yeah, so then 7 years later, I got picked again, and I'm happy to tell you I brought my clubs because I'm eligible to be picked again. Now, I don't know if I'm going to, you know, be that lucky, but I do have my clubs just in case it happens.
Well, Ann, if you played in 99, you were one of the few women to get on the course.
Well, you know, I don't know how, you know, I know wives can play. Back then, obviously, there weren't female members, but, you know, the members could invite, obviously, female women could play here. So I don't know if there was any, you know, record of, you know, how many women have played Augusta National, but women could play here. They just couldn't be members back then. Well, now that all changed,
yep.
Thank goodness. And we saw Condoleezza Rice, who's one of the members here. She was on the grounds on Sunday for the drive chip and putt competition for the juniors.
Now, I'm going to ask you, and talk to Ann Liguori, a distinguished broadcaster for years, ever since she was, as we said, a preteen. The women members, what does their green jacket look like? Does it look like a suit jacket? I mean, is it fit? It's fitted for. I mean, it's a weird question, but I'm just curious how they have it make it look.
Well, they're all fitted for each member, so you know, it's the same jacket.
It's not like double breasted though. I mean, do they make it look like a women's suit jacket, or is it look more like one of the guys' jackets? It just happens to be scaled down.
There's only one green jacket.
Okay, so they're getting the same type of jacket.
Yeah, it's the same green jacket, and it just is fitted for each member. So Condoleezza looked very, very good in her green jacket. Don't get me wrong.
You know what I'm saying, though, because often, I mean, if it's not like a women's suit jacket, that's a little different than a guy's suit jacket.
Right. But, you know, that's something I'll have to be a little more observant about when I see her next time around, to see just exactly how her green jacket looks compared to the guys, if they have like a ladies version of the green jacket.
That's what I mean. This could be groundbreaking.
It could be groundbreaking. I'll get the fashion police out there and
take a look.
Question next year. So ask me that a year from now, right, and I'll have the answer for you.
Now, when your friends ask you and people ask you, whose tournament will it be? Who do you think? Is it going to be Bubba again? Do you have any? You think Tiger could somehow rustle up some of the history and get his game back together? What are you looking for to happen at the Masters?
Well, one of the compelling elements this year is that there's so many players who can win. And, I mean, it's obviously great that Tiger is here. And, there's a buzz here because of Tiger's presence. At the press conference the other day, he looked very relaxed. He looked happier than I've seen him in a long time. And he described his swing issues as being, that he had as being stuck right between two release patterns. And he said he worked day and night to remedy the problems, and he's here. And so I got the impression that, he wouldn't have come unless he felt 100% confident that he was ready to play and that his short game woes have disappeared and that his swing is where it needs to be. So now, do I think he's going to win? No. Who knows if he'll even make the cut? He just hasn't played enough tournaments. To beat tournament tough, you have to play tournaments. And he just hasn't. But you never know who's going to show up when he tees off on Thursday at 1:48 Eastern Standard Time. My picks are Jason Day of Australia. Jason has been playing very well. He won an event earlier in the year, the Farmers Insurance Open, in a playoff, and he came in second in 2011. And then Jordan Spieth, the 21-year-old, he came in second last year.
Great story.
And I can see him wearing a green jacket, can't you?
Yeah, that would be neat. I heard something where, didn't Tiger, when he was talking about Jordan Spieth, he said that when he won his first one, Jordan Spieth was still in diapers?
That's right.
Which was about
That's
right.
That's right. I mean, which tells you that, we're still expecting so much from Tiger, but, he's 39,
yeah.
And
we
want the flashes of brilliance from Tiger that we're used to seeing, but that's because we have good memories of how dominating he was at one point.
His body's aged a bit. Now, Anne Liguori, we really appreciate you taking time with us. I love talking to you. She's had a distinguished career in sports broadcasting, and you want to go to Hulu.com and look for the 60 of the 600 interviews that Anne Liguori has done with some of the greatest athletes of our time and the time before us. You did have some wonderful ones. Anne, thanks so much for taking the time.
Oh, thanks so much. I really enjoyed it. Anytime.
All right. Take care.
Enjoy the Masters.
Yeah, I'm going to. It's a great great event. I love the Masters. Like I said, I'd love going to it. We're going to switch over to a little baseball. When we get back, we're going to talk to Pete Wagner, who hosts On Deck Radio 11 to noon on Saturdays. And we're going to be joined by Al Newman, one of his co-hosts, along with another former Twin, Gene Larkin. Gino won't be with us, but Al Newman will, and Pete Wagner, we're coming back. And by the way, you're twins. Oh, my God. It's 11 to zip, and it's just about over, mercifully. We'll be right back.
The NASCAR Sprint Cup Series, only on 105 The Ticket.
Joey Logano just screams out into the lead. McCurry's locked in the second. Matt Kenseth and Kevin Harvick side by side for third.
Night racing in the Lone Star State. The Duck Commander 500. Live from Texas Motor Speedway. Saturday at 5:30 p.m.
That's the battle for the lead in turn one.
This is Brad Keselowski.
This is Dylan Hart Jr.
This is Jeff Gordon.
This is Jimmy Johnson.
This is Kevin Harvick.
Your home for NASCAR in the Twin Cities is Sports Radio 105 The Ticket. The Bob Sansevier Show, only on Sports Radio 105 The Ticket.
We are joined by two of the three stars of On Deck Radio from 11 to noon, Pete Wagner and former twin Al Newman. And guys, I'm sure you've kept an eye on the twin score. It's the ninth inning and it's 11 zip, and the twins have a total of 9 hits in 2 games, and they're being shut out 15 zip. I think they've already set a record for consecutive innings without a run.
Okay.
I've got one hand over one eye, okay? But I'm still watching. I'm still watching.
You're a brave man. Well, there's always that comeback. I'm sure they have the rally caps on, Al.
Yes, I believe in the rally cap, and eventually they will score a run. I guarantee it.
Well, I guess you can wish in one hand. It's I wonder if Paul Molitor's saying, why didn't I go into broadcasting?
Yeah.
That's
I
a tough
thing. It's tough. You know, no excuses for these guys. I think simply saying Nolasco just struggled today.
Yeah.
From what I saw, he was 86-88 on the radar gun, and he threw quite a few hanging breaking balls. And so I've just got to chalk it up to first one out to shoot with temperature change, and hopefully the boys' bats will come around.
Well,
hopefully, Al, that new diet and the weight instructor won't get fired here anytime soon either.
Well, he does look better in his uniform.
He does. But I
will give him that. He looks great in his uniform. And
it looks so important.
I just didn't see the velocity. That was the one concern. And like I said, I'm going to chalk that up to temperatures. And, you know, his face the lineup is quite potent, but he let the guys who can't hurt you hurt him. That was 8-9, 1-2.
Yeah.
And, you know, 8-9 were 10-for-10. So, what? I mean, that's trouble.
9 is 4-for-4.
Yeah. They got on 10 times apiece. 5 apiece for number 8 and 9. So, 4-for-4 for a light hitting guy that got 6 hits, 7 hits in all of spring training. He was able to get 4 hits today, possibly, I think, 5 hits today. Or he got on 5 times, one or the other.
Now, let me ask you, Al Newman, we're talking to Al Newman, Pete Wagner. They do On Deck Radio with Gene Larkin, 11 to noon on Saturdays. Al, you were in a clubhouse for a number of years. I want to ask you, because, you'd think, well, maybe, you know, Irvin Santana could do better. How are players reacting, or how would you react if you found out a guy you're supposed to depend on basically just cost the team 80 games and himself, that you won't have a guy that was supposed to be a big help?
I tell you what, being a fan and a former player, as soon as I heard about it was like being kicked in the groin.
That stings.
Whatever positive vibe you had flowing was just shut down. And by no means am I going to say he would have won this game today.
No.
But it would have been his spot today, you know? You would have had a different atmosphere. But yes, as a player, I would be very upset. You know, what are we going to do now? I mean, you can't say the season's over, but it has been strongly affected by the carelessness of Santana.
Yeah, and you know, and Pete, because you obviously, you know, both of you still follow baseball closely. I've always, and this is not a knock on them signing Santana, but David Helmer and I, Hellboy, our producer, were talking about this during one of the breaks. I haven't seen, and I'm sure someone has done it, the average differential for a pitcher coming from the National League to the American League. Because basically, you're facing 8 guys and a pitcher. And sure. You're talking about 120, you know, if you're pitching 30 games.
You're only pitching to 7 because you're pitching around the number 8 guy because you know you got the pitcher there. So.
Well, that's a great point. So I just wonder, some of these guys.
They're going to give you probably 2 or 3 outs because they're going to bunt. So. Yeah, totally different. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's the point I wanted. I mean, it's these guys, I wonder how much they take into account, like, you know, Terry Ryan does when he looks at a National League guy, that it's not going to be, whatever he did last year, it won't be close this year. I'm sure they take it into account, but I wonder how much they take it into account, because I'm trying to think of the last National League guy that came over. Look at us. I mean, the guy with the, that joined, you know, that came over, Samardzija, he was horrible. He was great in the National League, but he struggled.
Bob, I think now with these saber metrics and all this different math that they're using to try to figure out if guys are worthy or not, I think that sort of put that to bed. But I know in our playing days, it didn't happen very much. I mean, you stayed within your division, especially, when I say within your division, I think the National League pitchers were just that, National League pitchers. And position players change on occasion, but not very often. And sure, it's been great for the game as far as free agency and monetary value, but some of these guys are getting some contracts, and like you just mentioned, they're getting beat up pretty bad when they make the transition to the American League.
Yeah, well, if I can jump in here for
a second. Absolutely,
you know, Pete. I'm not a big sabermetrics guy myself because I don't know how they work. But what I do know from my own unscientific approach is what you find are the guys that come from the National League, the American League, seem to jump right back whenever they have the opportunity to do that. However, when a guy like Francisco Liriano goes to the National League, boy, he seems to not really want to come back. So, I mean, those are my favorite metrics, and I completely agree with what you guys are talking about.
Oh, you're absolutely right.
Tougher.
Yeah, there's no question about it. Yeah, a lot of these, I'm surprised more don't make the leap from the American League to the National League, because it's like being on vacation for these guys.
Yeah, well, you know, it's so tough in the American League, and I hate to say, you know, National League is more of a fastball league. But that's also another little saying. They throw more fastballs. I don't know how true it is, but when you only pitch to the seven hitters and they're giving away outs by sacrifice bunting a lot of the time, you do get away with some things. In the American League, though, I will tell you this. 1 through 9, guys can hit, and they can hit off speed because you have to in this league throw a changeup. And you have to have 3 pitches. National League, you can get away with 1.5, maybe 2.
Now, let me ask you, you did play in the major leagues for a number of years. Did you have any, and I'm trying to think back because I don't remember, and it doesn't mean a lot. I mean, but when you're 0-2 and you haven't scored a run, does it wear on you?
Well, you want to get that first win. You anticipate the first victory.
You want that first run.
Just like your first run, your first hit, once you get over that hump. But again, this is no longer spring training. You're facing legitimate number ones and number twos.
Yeah.
And you're going to face them until you get them out of there. It's not like spring training where you take a guy out after 60 pitches, after 70 pitches. Now guys like Price are going to dominate. He probably didn't throw 90 pitches but one time in spring training, and that was his last outing. So things will settle down. Yes, you're anticipating, to answer your question, the first win of the season. Not only for yourself, but that manager is his opening job, and he's eager, too. His patience is not going to wear. I'm not going to say he's going to give up on guys, but that attitude is going to get a little honorary here in another day or two.
Now, yeah. Let me ask you this, because I know you guys, On Deck Radio, 11 to noon, Al Newman, who we're talking to also, and Gene Larkin, Hellboy here, David Helmer produces that for you, and he loves the stories that Al and Gene tell. What type of stories can people expect on Saturday, Pete?
This is going to be an amazing, amazing show. Al reached out to me earlier this week and said, you know, with Jackie Robinson coming up here on the 15th, or, you know, it's coming down the pipe here pretty quick, you know, we should bring out Ron Rabinovich.
Great guy.
We're really excited to hear his stories. And, of course, for those of you that don't know, he basically was the pen pal of Jackie Robinson, and the story is just iconic. It's been well documented, and many people have heard it. But
it's been a play.
It'd be well worth taking a few minutes out of your Saturday morning to hear him on for a segment or two. He will be in studio with us. We'll, of course, be solving the Twins' problems in the first portion of the program right now. And then we'll have a little preview moving ahead. Look, a little high school baseball. Justin Musil is going to join us. He's an advanced scout type guy, or a bird dog scout for the Texas Rangers. So it's a great show, and I'm looking forward to what we have on deck. I've been doing a lot of research on this, Al, so you better be ready.
Hey, you know what? Ron is such a great guy. I mean, how would you like to have, you know, President Kennedy or Jackie Robinson guys hanging out at your house, and you're a 10-year-old and one of the most iconic individuals in the world, Jackie Robinson, is writing you letters, and you guys are pen pals. It's an awesome story. I've seen the scrapbook. Hopefully guys will listen to us Saturday morning, because it should be filled with a lot of good stories.
And I've been talking to Ron for more than 10 years, doing stories about him done for the Pioneer Press. And we had him on last year, and I anticipate having him on the 15th, you know, which is Jackie Robinson Day, when all the players wear number 42. So, Ron, you'll hear Ron with you guys Saturday, and I'll probably have him on again, because it's just a great story that he does have to tell. So you got to listen to On Deck Radio at 11 to noon to hear Ron Rabinovich with Pete Wagner, Al Newman, and Gene Larkin. Guys, it's great talking. I love hearing, Al, it's great hearing you, and Pete, it's always great to be talking with you, too.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for the time.
All right, take it easy. We'll We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to go back to Augusta, Augusta National, and talk to Ann Ligori from there. Now we're going to talk to Jim Suhan from the Star Tribune and SuhanUnfiltered.com. We'll be right back with Jim.
From pro to college to high school, we've got it all covered.
If you put on 23, you put Jordan on your back, and that's what Zach LaVine did. He really lived up to the moment.
In one of the biggest stages in basketball.
Passionate sports talk on your sports station, 105 The Ticket.
We are back, and we are joined by Jim Suhan from the Star Tribune and SuhanUnfiltered.com. Also sitting here with us, John Tower. We'll talk to him in the next segment. He's certainly welcome to join in now from St. Thomas, basketball coach there, a psychology professor. And actually, I got to ask John when we talk to him on the psychology of these twins, what they're going through. It's over. 11-0, Jim. I'm sure you've been following it from Augusta. Still no runs, 15-0. They've been outscored in the first two games, and they've got a grand total of 9 hits in two games.
Yeah, they're not, things aren't going very well. That's my deduction from all the facts we've been presented. A couple things. You know, obviously, I do think that what has happened last week, I do think that this team is a little down. I mean, they were last Friday, Urban Santana pitched great against Boston's A lineup, and they thought they were finally going to go into the season with a truly upgraded rotation and truly a chance to at least be a competent team. And they signed Dozier the extension, and Mahler's got them fired up. And being fired up in baseball doesn't really matter, by the way. But what I mean is that Mahler had them believing they were going to play a better brand of baseball, better fundamentals, better base running, more attention to detail, all those things. And then the Santana thing happens. And then they go open up the season in Detroit in this kind of gray atmosphere against a really good team, against good pitchers. And I don't think anybody should have predicted or expected them to play this badly or to get outscored by this measure. But I do think that that was a kick to the teeth. And the other thing is, I got to bring this up. I'm a baseball guy, so I have to bring this up.
Yeah.
Reacting the way fans are reacting right now, which is, oh, my God, you know, it's over. You know, no reason to watch any of the last 160 games or whatever. It would be, Bob. You know, this is two games into a 162-game season. In the NFL, we would be at the juncture of the season where it's like middle to late first quarter. So basically, if you want to put this in football terms, which is the way every American fan thinks these days, in football terms, this would be like saying, okay, the Vikings had turnovers in their first two drives, season's over.
Well, that's a happy spin. That's better than what a lot of people are thinking. That's pretty good. But, you know, but
games, Bob, it's think of, I mean, do the math.
I know, you're right. It might even be earlier than that.
Divide 162. It would be the middle of the first quarter in an NFL game. It's almost, no matter what any team does in the first two games, win, lose, get blown out, win big, it's almost statistically insignificant. It's just getting started here.
Well, 10 games of baseball would be one game of football, so you're right.
Yeah.
It's not even, you know, it's early in the first quarter. You're better at math than me, so I'm not going to argue with you on the math. But it's, I think a lot of Twins fans, though, they're looking at the four, 90 plus lost season saying, here we go again. And, I'm sure that does gnaw on people, but they'll be back at it tomorrow. We'll see what happens. I'm more interested in knowing what, it's a shame what happened today, Jim, that Jack Nicklaus, well, he didn't win it, but that hole in one may damage his chances of winning the Masters, because when you have success at the par three, you don't win the Masters.
Well, that's very true. It was pretty cool. Now, I can't say I was out there amongst them. I tried going over to the par three tournament in the past. It's so cramped, and you just can't move around very well. So I was in here working, and I watched it on the big screen. But there was quite a roar, even in the press center. Where you're not supposed to cheer, but people didn't even cheer, but there was a gasp when Jack Nicklaus knocked that in. That was pretty cool. And, you know, it is great that this is the one tournament that they're at every year. It's the one tournament where people revere the place as much as the history. And, you know, Nicklaus and Palmer and Player, guys like that, embrace it. You know, Palmer was saying earlier today, somebody asked him, are you gonna do the ceremonial tee shot tomorrow morning? He said, you couldn't keep me from doing it. I mean, they eat up every bit of this. And to see Nicklaus, who's become this great ambassador for the game and for the Masters, do that at this stage of his life is pretty wonderful.
You know, now, do you go to the honorary, you know, when they tee off with Palmer and,
yep.
Well, it'll be him and...
Blair,
yes. Thank you. But what I was getting at is the first year I went, Gene Sarazen was still doing it. It kind of, I don't know, sad is maybe the wrong word. Maybe it's the right word to see these guys doing it. Because it means, like, this is, okay, where do they go from here?
Well, yeah, and it is very ceremonial in that way. And you don't want them to get to a point where they have a ceremonial starter who can't get it off the tee box, you know. But they, what amazes me is how well these guys still hit it. I mean, you know, I followed Nicklaus around his last round, competitive rounds at the Masters, and he couldn't hit it as far as everybody else. He still hit it dead solid down the middle. You watch him today, he makes a hole-in-one on the same course that all the other guys are playing on. And the last time I went and watched these guys hit their ceremonial tee shots, you know, they all hit them better than I would.
Yeah, and, well, Donald Palmer's 85 years old.
Yeah.
I don't know if Sarazen might have. Geez, I wonder if he was in his 90s when he was still out there doing this. He might have been. Because he was a feisty little guy, but it was fun though. I mean, a guy who made his mark in the 30s with his double eagle was still out there back in the 90s doing. Yeah, he was 97 when he passed away, and I think he continued to go pretty much right to the end.
Right, and that's a challenge for the Masters committee is figuring out, you know, when's the time for somebody to stop playing competitively?
Yes,
who has the right to keep playing? When's the time to stop having somebody get the ceremonial tee shot and all that? But I, you know, there are a lot of things. There are a lot of reasons not to like the Masters. But I think they handle those kind of things pretty well.
Well, it was, you know, when people ask me, what did you like covering the most Super Bowl? It was always the Masters that I had the most fun covering.
Yeah, it's probably my favorite assignment as well. There are just so many storylines. You know, it's kind of sports writing heaven. You're in a beautiful place at a great time of the year. There are storylines everywhere. There's almost built-in drama. And the great thing, you know, and it's the same reason so many players rave about it too. You know, I love covering the US Open, but every year you're in a different place and people are trying to figure things out as they go. You know, here everything's so built in.
Doesn't change.
That the back nine, the par fives on the back nine are going to play a major role as the week goes on. You know that the par fives on the back nine are going to be crucial on late Sunday afternoon. You know it's going to be it's going to be the most beautiful place in the world, but that's not going to vary. I'm not always someone who buys into nostalgia. Sometimes nostalgia is just an easy out, but here the nostalgia is live. It's real.
And also live and real, if you check out StarTribune.com, you'll see Jim's latest column, and Suhan on Filter.com, where you'll find his podcast. Jim, what's the latest one that you have put up?
I just put up Tom Kelly, my long talk with him about his stroke and his life in baseball and working with Molitor and some old-time baseball stories thrown in.
He's a great guy to talk to because he really, yeah. I mean, he's got a lot. He certainly has a lot of great memories.
Absolutely.
Jim, thank you so much. We'll talk to you tomorrow in the midst of the first round at the Masters at Augusta National. Thanks a lot, Jim Suhan, Star Tribune, and Suhan on Filter.com. We're going to come right back. We're going to talk to John Tower, coach at the St. Thomas basketball team and a psychology professor there. And I want to ask him about the psychology of not having a run in two games and just getting battered. And also talk about the Final Four, because there's a lot that came out of that. We'll talk to him about a young man that I know you saw him play in high school, because you've gone to a lot of state high school tournaments, Tyus Jones being most outstanding player. We'll be right back with John Tower.
Get your Twins inside update every weekday. Hardball with Mike Berrettino of the St. Paul Pioneer Press.
Paul Molitor is not looking to skip the fifth rotation spot.
You don't really need that guy if you keep, say, Phil Hughes on a every fifth day turn, and he said he's not tempted to do that. He likes what he's seen out of the fifth spot.
Hardball with Mike Berrettino. Brought to you by Nature's Fury NutriDrink. Every Monday through Friday afternoon at 5:30 with Radioactive Sports. 105 The Ticket. Now back to the Bob Sansevier Show, Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.
We're back, and we are joined by John Tower, basketball coach at St. Thomas and psychology professor there. And John, we talked to Jim Suhan a little bit about this, but Do you like to have the psychology of taking a team into game three? And I know there's a lot of games left. As Hellboy said, it could be, I can go 160-2. Sure they will. But you haven't scored a run. You've been outscored 15-0. And you only have 9 hits. So in other words, in 2 games you have 9 hits and the team you played outscored your hits by 2.
Certainly not the way you'd want to start off a season. And it is a long year, but... you know, anybody in that clubhouse right now, certainly they're not sounding the alarms, but they're saying, hey, something's got to change and we got to get going here.
Now, you obviously in basketball, you've had really good teams, so a tough start. You've never had a tough start, have you? As an assistant or as a head coach?
I don't remember the last time we didn't score for 2 games. I can tell you that. But you know, we've lost our games over the years. We haven't, fortunately, had many losing streaks because those do try a team emotionally as much as anything else.
And obviously, Tyus Jones had a great national championship game. You obviously, when you have players, you can pretty much count on them being around. And I know it's been an adjustment for Krzyzewski because I'm trying to remember who the player. Maybe it was a few players. He lost a few players. It was like the first batch that went early. And like Corey Maggette was in that group. And I think he refused to put up their like ACC banner or their regional championship banner because that was the first group he had lost. How tough an adjustment do you think that is for a coach? And I mean, do you think some coaches would rather have the guys stick around all that time than have the quick hit?
Well, I think it is. It's a tough one because I think Coach K at one time really said, we don't want any of these players. And he didn't like that. And I think then he came to see, well, if I'm going to get the top 25 guys in the country,
I have to be like
I'm going to have to do that a little bit. So some of it's a function of, you know, Wisconsin isn't, they're typically not getting those kids, and they're going to have kids for 3 or 4 years, although Decker, it looks like, may leave. I think it does change the nature of how you recruit. Duke only having 8 scholarship players, in part that was him knowing, wisely, Okafor may leave, Winslow may leave, Jones may leave, or some of them might come back, in which case we want to have some scholarships and some flexibility either way, because that puts you up against it.
Yeah. Now, you... I would think Okafor will wind up leaving and Winslow. And Tyus, it's easy to say, yeah, he'll leave. I'm not convinced yet. I wouldn't be surprised if he did, but I'm not. I don't know if you can be 100% sure that he will because he may decide that, you know, he wants to go back for another year.
Yeah, I think the hard thing is, and I think it's hard for all these kids, these young kids. I think he'd love to be back at Duke, but probably there's no better time for him to leave just
from a financial
perspective. And typically guys who are borderline and stay in, the longer they stay in, unfortunately, their draft status goes down. So, you know, there's at some level, I think a guy like Sam Decker, a guy like Tyus Jones, probably this is as high as they're going to be picked.
Well, after he played a phenomenal game in that championship game because he carried him. But who would if you were told Duke will have Jahlil Okafor will be in foul trouble most of the game, so will Justice Winslow. People think the spread should be 10 or 15 points. They'd have no shot.
Yeah, what he did, I mean, as a freshman, to do that on that stage. Grayson Allen as well. And I've seen Tyus. I remember the first time I saw him in about 7th or 8th grade, and it was unbelievable to see a kid that good, that young. And what's impressed me the most about him over the years, he really, by all accounts, has stayed very humble. He's the consummate teammate, and he performs unbelievably well. The bigger the game, the better he played all year long as a freshman.
And Zach Goring had talked about it, the coach at Apple Valley. We had him on yesterday, and I did an interview with him that's in the Pioneer Press. He talked about that, what he saw Monday night out of Tyus, he has seen a number of times, but they're in small gyms, and, you know, a few hundred or maybe 1,000 people saw it, depending on, how big the high school gym was.
Yeah, and I think at some level, you know, it's the old Hoosier scene where Gene Hackman measures the hoop, right? I mean, once you get out there, the floor in college is 94 feet instead of 84 feet.
Have you ever done that?
We measure the foul line sometimes to convince our guys that it is actually 15 feet.
Because some of them question it?
No, just to give them a little confidence.
Oh. Have you ever measured it? My God, this is off. Has that ever happened?
They painted the lines in our gym, and it was off about 2 years ago when they came in.
Really?
It was our auxiliary gym. So that was a mess. That was funny. The first day of practice, our guys came in, and they were airballing because the free throw line was about 17 feet instead of 15 feet.
They went 2 feet? More?
They measured it off the wall. It was a tight side rim. So
you had to know as soon as you walked in something was off.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was 2 inches, but 2 feet.
Fortunately, it was our practice gym and not our main gym.
Yeah, so could you imagine if nobody caught it? your guys would have been way off when they got into the into a real game.
So yeah, it was that was funny, and but I will say it was the tournament this year I thought was just fascinating from the storylines of Duke, Wisconsin, Kentucky. I mean, all those teams were exceptional, and the games came down to the wire, and you saw kids making great plays.
Now you I mean Okafor was the guy that was presumed to be the number one overall. I don't know if that's going to change something. People think maybe it should be Towns, but who would you? I mean, if you were to look at their games and how it could convert to the NBA, would it be Okafor for you? Would it be Towns? Where would Winslow and Kaminsky and well, quite frankly, Tyus fall in there?
Well, I think, you know, after watching it, I think Okafor defensively, people probably will be a little scared after the other night. The way Kaminsky really, and he wasn't a stellar defender all year, but the other night he really struggled to guard in space, and with as much ball screen offense as NBA teams run, he's going to need to shore that up. He certainly can. But if I had to make a number one pick right now, I would go with Towns. I think his shooting touch, his ability around the hoop, and I think defensively he's a better player than Okafor.
Well, John, we appreciate John Tower, the coach at St. Thomas, men's basketball. Team, also a psychology professor there. Time just flew. Thank you. We're going to turn things over to superstar Mike Morris and Ben Holson. They'll be joining you and stay with you till 7. It's going to be a fun couple of days with the Masters coming up, and Twins have day games. We'll keep you abreast of that club. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
The hairs on your arm will stand up at the terror in each sip and in each sup. Will you partake of that last offered cup or disappear into the potter's ground when the man comes around?
Here's Sports Radio 105 The Ticket on iHeartRadio.